Welcome to the Film Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 10:13 British Summer Time. Today is May 28th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and it really has been quite tumultuous. By Monday of this week, a large number of stock markets had developed short-term oversold conditions and had lost some momentum on the way down from Monday onwards yesterday. So really quite impressive upward dynamics across a whole range of markets, led by Indonesia, which had rallied really quite impressively on Wednesday. Today, we saw some additional follow-through in Asia, and Europe and the USA closed a little bit weaker, but held the majority of yesterday's gains. Elsewhere, in the commodities sector, we also saw that the majority of commodities found at least short-term support this week. And oil in particular rallied very impressively this week. It hit an intraday low of $65 last week and hit $75 in here today. So really a very impressive advance. And particularly yesterday, there was a really very large upward dynamic. So oil finding at least short-term support in here. In the other side of the equation, where if we look at stock markets and commodities as the as risk assets, safe haven assets such as the yen, the dollar, and the non-peripheral European sovereigns as safe havens, so U.S. Treasuries, gilts, bunds, they all encountered at least short-term resistance in here this week. So the risk-on, risk-off trade that has dominated the swings in markets over the last year remains very much intact. Elsewhere in the currency markets, the yen, which had a very large move against a number of currencies in the last week, encountered resistance this week, particularly yesterday, and pulled back rather violently. The US dollar, which has also had a very big move against a number of currencies over the last month, also encountered some resistance in here this week. The euro is a bit of a special case because the focus of the current anxiety, although there are concerns about China tightening or the Goldman indictment or the BP oil spill or the program trading that pulled markets back on the 6th of May. The main focus of bearish attention rests with the debt problems of the peripheral Eurozone. And this is obviously a non-trivial concern. There remains the possibility that some country is going to vote in a government that is not going to stick to the fiscal restrictions that are being imposed by the European Commission. And that could rapidly see a deterioration in sentiment towards the currency. But we're not at that juncture just yet. And while there remains significant potential that we could have a country drop out of the euro or the euro be reformed without one country or some form of legalese that will allow them to eject a country, that isn't an immediate prospect right now. And sentiment towards the euro has deteriorated really quite considerably, and it is overextended on just about any measure against most currencies. So, particularly against the US dollar, it has pulled back to an area of previous support near the 2008 lows and rallied somewhat yesterday and gave up part of it today. It really does need to put in a much more impressive upward dynamic. At the very least, it needs to hold above the 2008 lows, and there remains the potential that it could go down and actually test the psychological 120. So the crisis in the euro is not over, but there's I suppose the old saying that it's a bad wind doesn't blow somebody some good is really very applicable to this situation, because the European exporters are going to be thanking the lucky stars that the euro is getting weaker. And that will be particularly the case if the euro's decline is sustained for any considerable period. It certainly doesn't look like a viable scenario that the euro is going to get back up to its highs anytime soon. So I think probably the major concern for some of these particularly central bankers is the speed at which the euro has declined rather than the direction of the move. Sentiment towards European markets has remains really very bearish, and anxiety generally in the stock markets is at high levels. The VIX index hit, I think, close to the 50 level last week, but formed a Keeley reversal and has pulled back rather sharply. So we have certainly found at least a short-term low. Now, that's not enough. We know that that's a low. It may not be the low. We're going to have to see that, probably most importantly, that markets find support at a progressively higher level and push back above their moving averages where they have fallen below them. Once we see that, we'll have better evidence that we found the low for this correction. And the short-term oversold condition and the pullback on the VIX and the pressure, on the one hand, the acceleration that safe haven assets have experienced, and the fact that they're encountering resistance all supports at least a pause in the downtrend for short-term downtrends for most of these stock markets and risk assets generally. And we'll need more evidence to suggest that the low for the correction has been found. When we look at the global markets as a beauty contest where we can act as the judges, then it really is a two-tier competition. Because on the one hand, we have slow growth, or perhaps no growth, economies where regulation is likely to only get tighter and they haven't been managed particularly correctly, and where governments have become new converts to fiscal responsibility but have massive debts around which they have to form policy. And you can compare that to the high growth, improving standards of corporate, civil, and economic governance that surplus countries and creditor nations in the so-called emerging markets, or I suppose what we like to call the progressing markets. And I know where I'd rather be invested. And because we have this slow growth environment in the USA, Europe, the UK, and Japan, and monetary conditions that remain extraordinarily accommodative, and no upward pressure on commodity prices right now, that means that there is an abundance of liquidity that will invariably find itself in the most attractive assets. And right now, they look like they will increasingly be funneled towards the major investment theme of the last decade and probably the next decade, which is the greatest urbanization in history. We've seen in the last decade that billions of people have been raised out of poverty and into the middle classes. And that is something new for the world economy. This is creating demand for just about every consumable imaginable. Everything from commodities to cosmetics. And that's a secular theme. So while we have a number of different ways of investing in this theme, and there are a large number of companies in the developed world that supply the goods and raw materials that these emerging consumers want, there is also the fact that this group of new middle class people are young. and they're hitting their peak productivity years in the next decade. They'll need to build schools, roads, hospitals, sewers, and just about everything that we take for granted in the developed world. China has already led the way in terms of that form of development, but other countries are beginning to pick up their, were beginning to chase China's development, and among those, India is finally beginning to get its act together on the infrastructure development. So that also remains a secular theme. And probably it's the greatest urbanization in history is a theme that has the power to capture the imaginations of investors. And by that I mean that it has a sound potential to become an investment bubble over the next decade. That's at least part of the reason why we focus so much of our attention on Asia, because it's the growth leader of the global economy and also the population center, and has been aggressive in developing their export capabilities, but are increasingly looking towards their domestic markets, and that again is a secular theme. So that's something that is likely to dominate investor demand for a considerable period, but these markets are not going to divorce themselves from Wall Street anytime soon, and the Wall Street leash effect remains very much intact. And by that I mean that when Wall Street is steady to rising, it allows liquidity to flow out to other markets. But when Wall Street is contracting, then it gets pulled back in no uncertain terms. And it's certainly notable that Wall Street certainly hasn't been the worst performing market here. The crisis has been most acute in Europe. Looking at the performance of the USA year to date, the Dow is down 2.79%. The Stoxx 50 in US dollars is down 24.5%. And if you bear with me a moment, I'm going to switch that over to euros. And in euros, the situation is really quite acute as well. So when we look at US dollars or the performance of Wall Street, it's performing its relative performance in the US dollar and in euros is really quite impressive, and suggests that while the USA has its own troubles, the fact that the USA was first into this recession and had an aggressive bailout package and rescues for US banks puts it at a competitive advantage relative to Europe right now. The need for an additional stimulus is much less compelling in the USA. Now, the US has its own problems, and the housing market is really non-trivial, and the looming role of adjustable rate mortgages is certainly a cause for concern, and the failure of the consumer to lead the way out of this recession is an additional cause for concern. But there are signs that the market is recovering and it has returned to growth, and the export sector has certainly benefited from the weakness of the US dollar. Now, that's going to be a disadvantage relative to European exporters, where they compete, where US exporters compete with European exporters over the coming months as the euro has deteriorated so swiftly against the US dollar. But when one looks at something like the Asian dollar index or the Latin American dollar index, the dollar hasn't appreciated by nearly as much. And since that is the growing area for exporters, That's pretty good news for both European and US exporters. I'm not nearly as worried about the US economy as I would have been a year ago, because it's beginning to show relative strength, and particularly against those European markets. And that is something that is a broad positive for the global economy. If you have the USA, which all has returned to growth, albeit relatively slowly, that's a broad positive, because Europe is also going to have a hard time returning to growth. And if the USA were to move back into recession, then we would really be into a more difficult scenario. But right now, with treasury yields quite low and oil prices certainly not surging higher, and definitely no crisis in the US dollar, and the vast majority of the better performing markets in emerging markets finding at least short-term support in the region of their progressions of rising reaction lows, that is broadly bullish over the medium to longer term. It doesn't say that the current correction is over, but it does look like that it is a correction within an overall bullish environment, in which case the better performing markets, such as the emerging markets or Asia, Latin America, or commodity producing Latin America, and technology and the resources sectors, were being rapidly presented with the next good buying opportunity once they begin to find support, where we see clear upward dynamics and where we see that markets are finding support at progressively higher levels. Then that will be good evidence that this medium-term correction has reached its low. Sentiment will be interesting to watch, because if we continue to see that sentiment is deteriorating, but price action isn't, that is the kind of divergence that we often see at important market lows. And sentiment really is very bearish right now. If we do see the most likely scenario for most of these markets, that we get increased ranging, then we'll see a war between supply and demand, and indeed the arguments both for and against why these markets should deteriorate further or rally. That is what we would expect in a ranging phase, but provided we see that these markets find support at progressively higher levels, we'll have evidence that demand has regained the upper hand. But we're not there yet. This short-term low that was found this week is certainly supportive, but markets need to do more to really indicate that they've found meaningful support. And at a minimum, they need to hold this week's lows, find support above them, and get back above the 200-day moving averages where they've fallen below them. The oil market, again, is really quite interesting because of that really large upward dynamic that we saw this week. It's pulled right back up to its 200-day moving average, and that average has turned downwards. It really does need to get back above it. This upward dynamic will certainly have closed out some of the shorts that were at the lower side of this relatively lengthy range, but the volatility is such that it will need to get back above its 200-day moving average to really begin to convince people that that the bulls have regained control. We remain in this very uncertain period, and the chart action is really the only is the reality check for the market right now. I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.